Bob Brosman is a world-class guitarist and a traveler. He speaks many languages, though the language he knows best is music. Brosman recently took his Hawaiian guitar, called a Weisenborn, and some other assorted stringed instruments to La Reunion, a small volcanic island in the South Indian Ocean. There, he joined forces with local legend René Lacaille to produce music for a CD titled Dig Dig. This is a typical Bob Brosman collaboration. He told us he has a thing about islands.
For one, when we say islands, let's just say islands under 150 miles in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at islands that way, there's never been an island of that size that's created a military or business empire. And so the people in those places tend to be more preoccupied with more immediate things like life, love, food, nature, and music on the one hand. On the other hand, islands are visited by lots of foreign cultures, which deposit instruments and musical ideas on their shores and then depart, leaving sort of a hothouse laboratory environment for the music to evolve in its own way.
Give us a little bit of the history of the island of Reunion and its cultural history as well.
Well, basically, it was uninhabited until it was visited probably around the 10th century by Arab sailors. And then the French discovered it about 300 years ago, and it became kind of a sugar plantation island where they brought slaves in both from Madagascar and from East India. So you've got this delicious culture of French, Madagascar, and East Indian food, music, language, and along with, you know, a sprinkling of French colonial musical instruments.
So tell us, first of all, what instrument are we hearing, and then what's happening here in this song that's characteristic of La Reunion?
Well, let's see. You're hearing three percussion instruments. You're hearing a guitar, a Greek baglama played by René, which is a three-stringed instrument, and I'm playing an acoustic Hawaiian guitar. And basically, there's two ways to pat this music, to think about the time in it. So the first way is this way. Here comes 2-1-2-1-2-1-2, and the other way is in 3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3. And the intellectually rich part of this music consists of flipping your mind back and forth between those two ways of hearing it, and the musicians are constantly dividing and multiplying off those two times, whereas European music is usually just in 1 meter.
So you say if we can listen closely to this, we can sort of hear a very different rhythm pattern that changes the way the song sounds.
Exactly.
Really wonderful. Really adds to the richness of the music.
Well, when we play live, your brain fills up with so much pleasure that the musicians invariably wind up sort of shouting spontaneously. I find it to be rhythmically the most interesting and rich music I've ever encountered. And if Cuban music is the highest development of 4/4 on the planet, Maloya and Sager are definitely the highest development of 3/4.
One is the modal music, and the other is the European chordal
music. The older form is Maloya, and it's more African-based in terms of just the hypnotic continuo without chord changes. And then as French chanson and musette waltz spread down there through recordings and colonists, you start getting European song form and chord changes. But rhythmically, they're both an upside-down 6/8, which I'd love to be able to explain to you.
Please do, yeah.
Well, basically, Europe kind of missed the boat on having fun with the waltz. I think they were too busy marching. Europe never really got past 1-2-3, 1-2-3, or maybe 1-2-3-in, 1-2-3-in.
Mm-hmm.
Africa realized that you could count it in 6 and go 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5-6, and once you've done that, then you can put a 2-pulse in, as in 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5-6. So you can count this triplet feel in 2-1-2-1-2, or 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2. 1-2-3-1-2-1-2. The Madagascar and the Réunionais people actually flip the accent over so that out of the 6, 2 and 5 become the loud thing. So instead of 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5-6, it becomes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1 downbeat and offbeat. And basically, it's not an issue of black and white, because Japan and Okinawa will bear this out as well. Colonizers tend to be interested in the beat, and the colonized tend to be interested in the and between the beats. And so when you are focusing on the and, you stop seeing the beat as something to follow, but more something to react to.
So why is that? I mean, what is there about the and, or the space between the beat and being on the beat? Is it a mindset?
It is, actually, yeah. I mean, for me, polka, march, disco, and pop, techno, those are all rhythmically exactly the same thing. It's all marching music. It's all followed on the one, two, three, four. But if you take Okinawan music or Jamaican ska or blues or by extension a lot of jazz, there's just a consciousness about the and. For example, both Reunion and Okinawa, both of them have this feel where the and comes so quickly behind the beat, because it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. And so in order to play that way, you learn to divide your body up between the beat and the reaction to the beat. And so the Reunion music, the dancing, and the music itself is very, very sensual, because the and really seems to be the sexy part of the beat.
Right.
Describe your collaboration with René Lacaille. What happened musically?
Well, it was really like a whole upside-down world for me, discovering the world's strongest and-based music. It was really a revelation, and I spent many embarrassing minutes on the wrong side of the beat as I was first playing with him. René is a guy that's full of humor. The lyrics on the CD are full of puns in Creole. Like with most of the people I collaborate with, the stage routine actually consists of knocking each other out and raising each other to higher and higher levels of music and excitement.
Let me ask you about another experiment that you do with many musicians that you meet on islands. You bring them an instrument from Peru called a charango. What's the point?
Well, for one thing, I'm not wealthy, so I can't afford to give guitars away, but it's actually much more interesting to give away the charango, which is a small 10-stringed instrument, 5 pairs of strings, tuned like a ukulele, which is collided with a mandolin. As I've worked with different musicians from different cultures, I always give them one, because it's quite curious to see what the musician will do with that instrument after a period of time. And they've really, really taken root in Reunion. I think there's about 16 of them on the island at the moment, so it's rapidly becoming a traditional instrument there.
Can you give us an example of the different way that a musician on Reunion might have use this charango and another musician from another island?
Sure. Well, the beauty of the charango is it's quite dry and rhythmic. So, for example, at the same time, I'll kind of evolve you from European waltz to the Maloya Sega rhythm. So European waltz would be something like this. A 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. The same thing in Africa might be. I'm going to flip it over. Now, a Hawaiian might take the same instrument and do something completely different with it. More, slack key style.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a very versatile instrument, and René is inseparable from his, as I am with mine. And we actually found ourselves in a Zulu township a couple of years ago we were playing at a festival in South Africa, and they brought us to watch this Zulu dancing, and it was Renee and I and 4,000 Zulu people. Next thing you know, we were up on this flatbed truck stage entertaining 4,000 Zulus with two charangos. It was a great experience.
Is there a track on the CD that features the charango?
I believe it's the very last track, Maria Yaya, is simply two charangos and hand claps.
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of ethnomusicologists might go to an island and try as hard as they could not to affect the music of the island, not to change it, to leave it the same. But when you go to an island, you bring something new and leave it behind.
Well, it's that old thing, you know, of the Star Trek directive. You're supposed to observe a culture without disturbing it. However, the counterbalance to that is, how can you prevent the natural curiosity that musicians have when they say, hey, what is that instrument you've got there in your hands? I'm certainly not going to tell them, no, sorry, you're not allowed to touch this instrument because it's not part of your culture.
And it's obvious that in a place like Reunion, the mixing is the thing.
Absolutely. The food there is French, Creole, Indian. It's the best food in the world. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what I'm doing is practicing four levels of anthropology at once. When I work with a new musician, I'm checking their pupil diameter, respiration, muscle movements in their arm, just to see how each individual musician breathes their music. On a second level, I'm doing musical anthropology, which is to say, what are the rules and regulations of Okinawan music? What makes it sound Okinawan? On a third level, I make it my business to understand the history of the country vis-a-vis itself and its relationship with the rest of the world. And on a fourth level, it's kind of a social anthropology where, just out of respect, I try to learn the language and behave in a culturally correct manner with who I work with. My goal basically being, I want the other person to be happy, because that's when the music flows.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bob Brosman, a world-traveling musician. His latest CD is Dig Dig. He did it in collaboration with Renee Lacaille, a musician from Reunion Island.